Before you watch this video, there is an extended 3-hour version over at Sargon of Akkad's channel. You can click it and go there after watching this uncensored. This was not aired terrestrially. You're welcome, America and UK. Jared comes and, you know, smacks me when I'm not looking, which is what guys do. I smack him back. My wife does it. I never would. That is sexism. Now, there is negative sexism. And
if you were a good feminist, you'd...
So glad to have this next guest. For those of you listening terrestrially on Wham or any of our wonderful affiliates, we will have a bonus extended uncensored cut online exclusively at louderwithcrowder.com. This gentleman, he hails from the UK. And I've noticed a really large contingency of people sort of not becoming more conservative, but becoming more open to pro-freedom ideas. Immensely popular. You can find him on YouTube. Sargon of Akkad. Did I get that right, sir?
Pretty much, yeah.
Pretty much. Okay, what's the much, pretty much part that I got wrong?
Well, I think it depends on where you come from and how you pronounce it. I mean, it's the name of an ancient Mesopotamian emperor.
Right.
Transliterated into modern English. I mean, the name was actually Sharukinu of Akkadiu or something.
Yeah.
So Sargon of Akkad is close enough.
All right, there we go. Well, I'm glad to have you on the program. You came to us through Milo Yiannopoulos, who people really liked. And, you know, it's funny, like you said, you didn't really expect, I guess, to be on sort of this terrestrially syndicated show, and I never really expected to be kind of merging the worlds that I am. So we have these people who are really popular online and then people who are really popular with the terrestrial audience, and they don't know about the two separate worlds. So you sort of – would you say Gamergate is what's really given you this sort of rise to notoriety? Would you say that's the biggest sort of catalyst or no?
I like the use of the word notoriety.
It is. It is. Yeah, I was a little worried in calling you. I mean, we've called Imam Chowdhury, and I was more nervous about you.
Jesus, that's worrying. I'd been doing my YouTube channel for about probably about a year before Gamergate, and I had about 20,000 subscribers. And since then, I'm now on about 130,000 or so, and that's been about 9 months. So it's probably really helped me.
Yeah,
but, that wasn't the reason I got into it.
No, I mean, it's pretty drastic. Now, I will say this: obviously, if we go to your channel now, we've talked about Gamergate. I don't want to get too far off into the weeds and the technicality. A lot of people won't understand it. But why do you think that has been such a big driver? Why do you think that's become so important? Because a huge portion of your content now is either centered around Gamergate or the social justice warrior sort of topic.
I think initially, I mean, I've always been the main reason that I got into doing my YouTube channel in the first place is because I've become very, very concerned with what I see as major violations of the principles of classical liberalism.
Mm-hmm.
I find it very, very disturbing, some of the bizarre attitudes I've heard coming out of the press, coming out of the gaming press, the mainstream press. Just, you know, the prevailing attitudes are worrying. They really disturb me. There seems to be this remarkable amount, there are a remarkable amount of people who simply don't see bias as a bad thing. They think objectivity is silly. They think that collusion for the greater cause of extreme progressivism is just fine. They think that the presumption of guilt is acceptable in certain conditions.
Right.
They think all kinds of frankly insane things that I can't countenance. And Gamergate is kind of a result of all of these things. These
right.
people don't seem to have any scruples. So they seem to have no problem with colluding and attacking their audience for the, you know, to promote their agenda and being corrupt, you know, openly corrupt. These people left a massive paper trail across Twitter of all places because they thought that they were untouchable. They didn't think that anything was going to happen.
Right.
And so when, you know.
Well, we talk about that on this program a lot, obviously not just the Gamergate thing.
Yeah.
But as a Yankee, you know. Walter Cronkite, Tom Brokaw, Dan Rather, Brian Williams, Larry King, all people who at one time were thought of as, my God, actual journalists. And
yeah.
All of them are just as guilty. Now, to go to one thing you said, I wouldn't say it's a disagreement. I think objectivity is a noble ideal. I think more noble is truth. And I think that pretty much any journalist, even if they try not to, has some sort of a bias. And that's, I mean, I'm
they
a comic, so I'm just always honest about it.
The issue is never really achieving objectivity because obviously you can't, you know.
Sure.
You know, the only way you could do that is if we're all robots. But it's the journey is
apparently
very much...
Ex Machina says we're going that way. So careful now. And they can be very attractive, by the way. I mean,
that,
not the only
one. It could well be the future. But the important thing is the journey rather than the destination. It's attempting to become objective that is important, because these people, instead of they have done exactly what I consider to be the wrong thing to do. They've looked at the situation and said, well, you can never really be objective. So what's the point in trying, even though it's the attempts to be objective that's important?
Right.
It's Aristotle said that excellence isn't an act, it's a habit.
Right.
It's what you do repeatedly. And these people are repeatedly biased, solipsistic. They don't care about reporting the facts as relevant to the real world. They care about something they call the narrative,
right,
which is a sequence of cherry-picked events that they use to justify their worldview. And they quite happily exclude items that, frankly, don't, you know, fit this constructed narrative.
Right. Well, you're actually sounding a lot like Andrew Breitbart right now. He talked about that for years and everyone made fun of him and said he was a...
Hey,
have you actually... I mean, you're in the UK. I know he has Breitbart London now with Milo, but have you followed Andrew's work at all?
No, not at all, actually. I watched one interview with him and he seemed like a nice enough chap.
Well, it's funny because everyone made him seem like this radical extremist. You know, he was a guy pro-drug... pro-legalization of drugs, totally couldn't care on the social issues. He was pro-life from a scientific standpoint, but he always talked about the media narrative. And he was the one who, I guess if you haven't followed him, he was the one who just demolished Anthony Weiner, found the Twitter pictures.
And I see.
But what the story a lot of people don't know about that, sorry, and then I'll bring you back right after this break, is people accused Andrew Breitbart, before he released those pictures, of lying and hacking Anthony Weiner's Twitter. The press knew that Anthony Weiner had done something, and they decided to go after Andrew again because it set the narrative. So it forced his hand literally to release the Space Odyssey pecker shot that we then saw in the media. We'll bring you right back after this, Louder with Crowder. Sargon Avakad, some name I can't pronounce. Sargon, you are back, sir, and I will give you the floor. But I think that you would probably find a lot of commonality with someone like Andrew Breitbart. And I say that as a compliment. I know some people would hear that and take it as an insult. The guy really understood media bias and media narrative better than anyone I've ever.
I've watched a few interviews with Ben Shapiro, who says that he was a good friend of Andrew Breitbart's.
Yeah.
And the people who have known him that I've seen speak about him speak very, very highly of him.
Mm-hmm.
So that's to his credit, obviously.
Yeah, I was pretty good friends with Andrew, and I never worked for him on a professional level. I was one of the first writers ever at his site when it was Big Hollywood, and but I was never on a pay scale, so we had a bit of a different relationship. And he loved my wife, He would always talk about how if you've seen my wife, she's way out of my league. Sorry, we're getting off topic. So
I haven't seen your wife, but so the problem with the media is that they honestly there are a lot of there are many different problems that are all coalescing into one gigantic, hideous monster. The first
one
is
that looks like a feminist. Continue.
But it's not. Feminism is just one aspect of it. The problem.
And the monster would physically resemble a feminist. It was just a short jab.
Oh God! Oh, sorry. Yeah, absolutely. But feminism is definitely an aspect of it. I mean, they would call it intersectionality. So it's all manner of radical progressive opinions that have become mainstream. That's the problem.
Right.
They're not fringe anymore. They've become mainstream. But the main problem is that the right wing, and I just for anyone listening, I'm not right wing. I'm center left. The right wing has been completely defeated. You guys have lost the public debate, and it's really disheartening to see. But you kind of brought it on yourselves. I mean, not you personally, but they kind of.
I was going to say it's a bit of a dick comment, but I understand when it's general. I was like, come on, I'm having you on the show.
No.
Don't blame me for the failures of the right wing, but I'm not
blaming you personally.
Sorry. No, I know. I'm joking.
I know. But the thing is, you guys have got to start being honest with yourselves, you know. And Ben Shapiro, I can't recommend him highly enough. He understands where you guys have gone wrong. And I recommend anyone who's curious, check him out. But basically, you guys were a great counterweight to the extreme left, and you failed. Frankly, it's not anything personal, obviously, but it's something.
Well, I would say we've certainly failed politically, obviously, recently, and there are some issues where culturally we failed. But I think that this is a great example where you don't realize it as you say some of these things. You are not center left. If you were to come to the United States, you would be considered a right wing extremist just by what you're expressing right
now.
Well,
that's the problem. That's the problem. It doesn't matter what I would be considered,
right?
Because if I was to take a political compass test, which I have obviously done, I'm center left. The issue is that the progressive left is so far to the left. Anyone who is even slightly more right than them is far right in their opinion.
Right.
And this, but basically, a lot of the people who subscribe to my channel are people who are left wing, but not extreme progressives. And what we are effectively seeing is a civil war within the left. And this mm-hmm. was really, I did a video about this because it really, really highlighted the issue. There was a point where the radical feminists declared chivalry to be sexist. Now, you can imagine that there were quite a few left-wing, you know, gentlemen who considered themselves to be rather feminist. You know, they were concerned about women's rights and equal pay and all this sort of thing.
The kind of androgynous wimps who are cooking in sweatpants when they come home. No, I know, I'm joking. But listen, I mean, there are
they're the sort of radical ones, but I'm talking about the more moderate ones who find themselves.
Here's the one thing I would say though before we get off that trail. Yeah. I would say there's nothing moderate about wanting equal pay. There's nothing moderate about saying women should have the right to vote, about equal rights. There's nothing moderate about that. But we have it. So what is considered extreme is for me to say it's not an issue anymore that needs to be discussed because you have those things. So I understand what you're saying, but I think you relinquish a little bit of territory by even considering that moderate because the left already considers that extreme.
That's not what I was considering moderate. I was really speaking to what they consider to be moderate. Rather than my own opinion is there is no gender pay gap. What it is an earnings gap.
Right.
Women choose careers that pay less and they work less and therefore in total they earn less. It's common sense.
Right.
So basically a large portion of the left, I mean, you could see this in the Daily Telegraph in the UK. Literally in subsequent days in the same newspaper, you had editorials from various different staff members either lionizing or castigating these radical feminists who declared chivalry to be sexist.
Right.
And you could see the contrast. They were like, no, it's not sexist for me to, you know, want to hold a door open for a woman. That's me being a gentleman, you know. But then you have the other side going, yeah, but that in itself is just benevolent sexism. It's still sexism. And so this is where the sort of radical left are really starting to lose people. And what basically...
And that's where language matters. Because you know what? Inherently, if you want to get down to the definition, it is sexism and that you are treating someone differently because of their sex. But like I've always said, and I've said this on the show many times, I don't know how many people on your channel have seen it. I told a friend of mine, and I told my wife, I said, listen, it is sexism that has me treating you so much better than I treat my video producer, Jared. If Jared comes and, you know, smacks me when I'm not looking, which is what guys do, I smack him back. If my wife does it, I never would. That is sexism. Now, there is negative sexism. And
if you were a good feminist, you'd...
Well, exactly. And I'm not, by the way, I'm not saying you should hit women. But the point is, it is sexism that protects women. I mean, if you Google YouTube right now...
They call it benevolent sexism. They have a term for it. And
I'm okay with that term. All right. Benevolent sexism. At least it starts with benevolent.
This is the thing. Ultimately, the path of reasoning they've gone down, it does lead to the point where you realize that any treatment of women for being even slightly different, which they obviously are different,
how dare
is
you?
A form of sexism. And it's too extreme for almost, you know, everyone except the extreme progressives. But the problem is this sort of extreme progressivism is what's being pumped out of universities now. University students are being, frankly, I would say, indoctrinated into this. This is the thing. You guys seem to have lost not only the media battle, but the academic battle. And mainly, this comes because you guys don't have any communications courses. In communications courses, what they are teaching students these days are the tricks of Edward Bernays and Saul Alinsky. And you've probably got some viewers whose ears have perked up at those two names, if yours haven't already.
Well, Andrew Breitbart was the one who brought Saul Alinsky to the foreground and drew that sort of connection with him in radical leftists like President Obama.
And the thing is, what's interesting about Alinsky is he was a leftist, obviously, and he wasn't a full-on Marxist. But his book, Rules for Radicals, isn't a partisan text.
No,
it's a lot. He describes it as the counterpoint to Machiavelli's The Prince. So it's about where Machiavelli's The Prince is the book to help the haves keep what they have. Rules for Radicals is to help the have-nots take what they have. So it's not a partisan book. So people in the right wing can read it. But the thing is,
It's more of an instruction manual than anything.
It is, but this goes back to, this ties in neatly with Edward Bernays. These techniques are bad techniques.
Right.
I personally find them immoral. You know, I don't think that you should propagandize people. I don't think that you should manipulate and lie and deliberately politicize issues that aren't political.
And like Alinsky said, accuse them of doing what you yourself are doing.
Exactly,
rules
and
like
hold
that.
Them to their own standards, yeah. Because they're obviously unrealistic. But you would never realistically expect someone to be able to maintain their highest standard. Everyone's human. Everyone has failures.
Sure.
And yet to demand it, you can't really go against it without looking like a villain. So it's... Basically,
well, and there's a pivotal issue there, and that's why the right has sort of lost culturally again, because yeah, they've conceded territory, not only media, entertainment, academia, and the narrative is set where basically it'd be like someone watching someone going for a high jump. You know, leftists are sitting there watching from the stands going, you didn't hit the perfect Fosbury flop there, and they laugh, but they don't even attempt it. So,
well, then you get zero.
Right.
You don't get a five, you get a zero.
You get a zero. You get a beam in your back.
In fact, you might even get a negative saying that you're actually trying to damage the sport of high diving. You know, the problem is that the left have spent decades in academia solidifying their position and with all sorts of complex rationales. They have sociological definitions for things. For example, racism is not merely being prejudiced against someone based on their skin color or their race. That's not what racism means to the extreme progressive sociological definition of the word. What they use it to mean is a system of or interlocking sort of system of power structures. So in their minds, if you're not someone who is benefiting from a power hierarchy, you can't be racist. So in their minds, white people are the only people who can be racist. Because if you look at, say, politicians in the US or in the UK, any European country, they're predominantly white and they're predominantly male, because what else would they
do? I don't like that you lumped the US in with European countries. We are not of your ilk, sir.
Well,
I'm joshing you.
Think.
I know. You know I'm Canadian, right? We still have your silly queen and her money. Continue.
You know, I didn't hear it. I normally can tell very clearly from the accent.
Oh, I had it beaten out of me. I'm French Canadian, so my mom is actually French, which if you want to talk racism, we've talked about this before.
Yeah, well, this interview's over, sorry.
Yeah, I know. Well, French Canadian, the French from Paris, French from France don't like, there's no one left to hate. Everyone hates the French. And so once you get down to French, like, well, who's the other sect of French people? And the people from Paris, like, we had the French Canadian, and then the French Canadian, we had the people from Paris, and there's no one left. So I get it. I get it. Continue. Sorry.
Christ, what was I? Yeah, so basically, in Western countries, the people who predominantly hold positions of power in, say, corporations and governments are white men. And, you know, that's to be expected. They're the majority of the population, of the working population, are white men.
Right.
So you are going to end up with majority white men in positions of power. And so the sociological definition of these things like racism and sexism, they have taken all of this into account and decided that what this is, and I'm going to quote directly, they call it a white supremacist capitalist patriarchy. And so they think that if you aren't a white man, then you cannot be racist or sexist, which enables them to go and be as hateful as they like to white men. In fact, being a white man is a pejorative term in these circles. Being right wing is a pejorative term in these circles. They will call you right wing as an insult. This is how bad your names are. This is, you know, I hate to be the bearer of bad news. And I get kind of annoyed by it because I'm not right wing, but I'm an extreme rightist, if you'd listen to them, you know. And
I think you're reasonable. And I think there was a point where people who were right wing. And listen, I think I have a lot of family members, and probably when I was a young teenager was guilty of this, where because of the religious influence, and I am full disclosure, I still am a Christian, I think a lot of people didn't have to rationalize their arguments anytime you get into an echo chamber. So I think one could have argued, yeah, the right wing seemed like they were fixated on certain points and weren't open to reason. I think that's flopped, where now you've got the left, and like you said, they have their very important narrative that they will protect at all costs through Alinsky tactics. You were singing my song, babe. Yeah. And now they're the ones who are closed off to reason. All right, sure. Wrap this up real quick. We'll have to go to a break and then bring you on for the online segment. But where can people best find you?
They can type in Sargon of Akkad into Google, and my name actually comes up first. So my YouTube channel would be the first link you get.
Look at him being all coy. He has SEO operator in his saying, I don't know. I just came out first. But
yeah,
you know. I'm just awesome. I just fell into it. Sargon of Akkad, we will keep you for the online segment. If you're listening to Terrestrially, louderwithcrider.com, stay tuned. If you like this, be sure to subscribe by clicking my general face in this box or listen again to the extended version of the interview with Sargon over at his channel. It's 3 whole hours. Right below that, we have an interview with Milo Yiannopoulos, who is also a fantastic interview and happens to be really gay.